Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kratzky. It's a big day in Kansas City, opening day at the K, and we're coming to you live from Kauffman Stadium to get an inside look at what goes on here as the Royals open their 2013 season. Good morning, everybody. The Royals take the field against the Minnesota Twins at 3 o'clock today. Today, we'll talk with a bat boy who went Major League, the Royals Senior Vice President for Business Operations, Kevin Ulick, who began his career as a bat boy. We'll visit with the coordinator for Slugger, the Royals mascot, to find out if Slugger actually talks. Bob Kendrick, who heads the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, will be here, and so will the man who runs the Royals Hall of Fame. Some of the Twins players are already on the field. They're stretching out in the outfield as I speak. First up today is KCUR's own Greg Eklund, who will update us on the Royals' prospects for a season that comes with some very, very high expectations. And Greg Eklund, always good to have you here.
Good morning, Welcome Steve. Back. It's good to be here. And you know how some say it's back to basics? Well, I'm rewriting it. I'm saying it's back to baseball.
Back to baseball. It's a little cloudy here, but they're saying the game's going to get in today.
Yeah, I think so. And there's no tarp on the field as we look out on the field. And the grass is green. And it won't be long when we'll have the smells of the baseball that permeate.
Absolutely.
The air here.
And boy, the field looks great. Opening day, the banners are hung, the red, white, and blue banners. You know it's a special day. It feels special. The place is buzzing with activity. It's just great to be out here, isn't it?
Slight breeze blowing in the outfield, as we see for those who are listening and want a picture of it, blowing from left to right.
There you go, as the announcers say, right?
Yes.
Well, okay, Greg, here we are 6 games into this brand new season. The Royals have been on the road for the first 2 series of the year. What have we learned about this team so far?
Well, it's good that any road trip where you finish 500 is really not a bad road trip.
That's right.
No matter how it unfolds, if you come back with more as many losses as wins, it's not a bad thing. So there are some rough spots. The bullpen had some rough patches. That's expected to be a strength.
I don't think there's
any reason for panic. It should be based on what they did last year, and these are guys who are ascending in their roles as opposed to guys who are long in the tooth.
So Penn almost gave up a win last night. They barely escaped Philadelphia with a 10-9 win, and they did give up a win a couple nights previous to that.
Of course, Greg Holland is in his first season in that role as a closer. He proved toward the end of the season that he could handle those situations, but he hasn't done it through the course of a full season.
Yeah.
That's what we're finding out now. But I think with the stuff that he has and he carries to the mound, he'll be all right.
How about starting pitching? What's the early take? We have a bunch of new arms on this team. That's supposed to be now a hallmark of the Royals once again after so many years of dismal performances.
Sure. Well, the marquee acquisition was James Shields. He gave the Royals an opening day start in Chicago that, frankly, with some run support, should have won.
Yeah.
But
it lost one zip.
It won nothing on a home run by a catcher who seldom hits home runs for the White Sox. So I think it's, as long as he stays healthy, it's encouraging. He's the horse that they need to anchor that pitching staff. And Irvin Santana is somebody who's pitching today that they're hoping can regain the all-star form that he had 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That remains to be seen. But as long as they get 6 innings out of a pitcher, they don't wear down the bullpen like they did last year, they'll be in better shape.
Hitting, we've seen the good and the not so good so far from this team, haven't we?
A little bit inconsistent, and sometimes I don't know if the weather has anything to do with it when they go from the climate change of Arizona to up north. But you know, when you press the button, you hope that everything carries over from spring training. But it's a little bit different when the big league rosters are set and everybody's playing for real. But I think the lineup will be okay. And it's, again, based a lot on potential because of ascending guys like Eric Hosmer.
I was going to say, when you talk about hitting, when you talk about this ball club, so much hinges on the performance of one guy, the first baseman, Eric Hosmer. You just mentioned him. Again, we're only 6 games in. What are you seeing?
Well, I haven't had a chance to see too much because I've, frankly, been covering a lot of basketball over the last week or so. But, you know, he didn't have a spectacular spring. He's working on some stuff, and it's one of those things where I liken this to the situation that Alex Gordon was in a few years ago. He went through a few bumps in the road along the way, but then when he finally, as they like to say, got it, Now he's one of the better players and an established major league ball player.
What does that mean? You hear baseball people use that term. You just use that phrase, got it. What happens when a player gets it that one day they have something they didn't have the day before?
I think given the competitive nature of these ball players, some of them can be stubborn because they think that, okay, I got to the big leagues by doing it this way, and maybe if they're a little bit more flexible, because this is, when you get to the major leagues, it's a game of adjustments. Yeah. Pitchers know how to pitch to you. It's how you adjust to them.
Yeah.
And along the way, along the path, that leads you to success eventually.
You know, Greg, we're visiting with Greg Eklund from KCUR. We're coming to you live from the ballpark this morning on opening day. A lot of analysts forecasting the time is right for this team to finish about 500 for the season. You see that in analysts after analysts here. Others hint that just maybe this team can surprise and do even better. Where is Greg Eklund on all this?
I said this a year ago, that they should have been over 500 last year. So
they're behind.
They are behind. And it would be a huge disappointment this year if they were anything less than a 500 team. And I think based on the acquisitions and about the time that these guys should be coming into their own, not just to be ball players, but to be high-profile producing ball players.
Yeah,
I think they should be a contender in the AL Central.
You know, Sam Mellinger had an interesting column today for the newspaper. He's talking about this idea that it was the fans demanding a better team. That's the reason we actually got a better team this year, that owner David Glass opened up his wallet a little bit, an $80 million payroll for this team, a little higher than we've seen in previous years. Do you buy that idea that the fans, after the All-Star game last year, and they turned out in such huge numbers for quality baseball, they demonstrated that they're ready to support a winning team, and they finally demanded it and got it?
I think that the support has been there all along. I think the fans will support what they think is a good product on the field, and over the last 10 years or so, the product hasn't been very good. So, you know, let's be honest about that. The product is ascending. It's better. These are the guys that they've been talking about in the minor leagues for the last 4 years or so. They're finally ready to come into their own. And I think it was a great coming out party for the nation to show how well Kansas City can support its baseball team and baseball in general. But now that the team is ascending, as we believe they are, I think they'll come out once they see that this is an entertaining product on the field.
You know, Sports Illustrated, Greg, just wrote this week about the state of Major League Baseball. And the magazine said this: the World Series winner could come from almost anywhere. And I had forgotten that last season, four losing teams from 2011, the A's, the Orioles, the Nationals, and the Reds, crashed the postseason last year. So there you go with firm recent evidence that losers can become winners very, very quickly in Major League Baseball.
Sure, if they are prudent in the decisions that they make, avoid injuries, and it doesn't take necessarily the high dollars. I mean, the Yankees have one of the highest payrolls, if not the highest. I think the Dodgers now have the highest now, but the Yankees are right up there, close to the top. But a lot of questions surround the Yankees this year because of injuries, and some of their guys are getting up there in years.
And they're off to a bad start, as we've already seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is the league so wide open? What's happening that the game has evolved to this point, that it's a different kind of game today than it was maybe 10 years ago when money, in fact, did speak?
I think some of it is because of that prudence that I talked about. I don't think, unless you have a few exceptions, that the free agent spending is as crazy as it was 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Because they're not seen to be instant fixes anymore. And I think more teams are realizing that the greater success is if you build from within and then maybe add a couple pieces along the way to help supplement what you're building within your own system.
So interesting, last year, Albert Pujols, the best player in the big leagues, everybody seems to agree, goes from the Cardinals to the Angels, and nothing magical seemed to happen, which surprised a lot of people.
Well, he changed leagues, and he changed geography between going from the St. Louis Cardinals to the West Coast, and You had to believe that he was probably getting the feeling that he had to carry the team on his shoulders because of the money that they're paying him. And that has a way of... But 2 months into the season, once actually they fired their batting coach about 6 weeks into the season, and then after that, I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but his numbers started getting better, and then he started producing more like Albert Pujols' numbers.
You know, Greg,
but here's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Did the team get in the playoffs? No, they didn't. The Angels were
one
of those teams that was left out last year.
Just one thing quickly that it seems to me the Royals are still lacking. You hear all this talk about fat local TV contracts. This team still doesn't have a fat local TV contract. It's on, correct me if I'm wrong, it's in the midst of a fairly long-term deal that isn't all that lucrative for this franchise. That's got to be holding us back just a little bit.
Sure, and that's why so much is dependent upon attendance and the number of suites that are sold. And when the renovations were completed, it increased the number of suites. So, again, it comes back to the product on the field. If you have a more entertaining product on the field, then the demand for seats and suites come around.
So let's end this portion of our show on a high note, Greg.
Yeah.
Don't let me down here. So you're saying there's a chance this ball club could wind up in the playoffs this year?
Yeah, if you say there's a chance, I'm going to say yes, there's a chance.
Okay, it could happen.
Yes, it could happen. You know, a lot of it has to depend on the teams around them, but if they get in that 85 to 90 victory range, there's a chance.
All right. KCUR's Greg Eklund, always good to have you, Greg. Enjoy the rest of the day. Sure good to have you here.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, again, if you're just joining us, we're coming live from the opening day ceremonies at the K out at Kauffman Stadium. We just visited with KCUR's Greg Eklund, and now joining us is Kurt Nelson. He's director of the Royals Hall of Fame. And, Kurt, always good to have you, too. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Seemed like just a year ago you were sitting right here, and here we are again.
It happens fast, doesn't it?
It happens fast. How hard is it for you to believe, Kurt, that this ballpark now is 40 years old, which seems incredible to me. And I haven't been here for all 40, but I've been here for most of them.
It is hard to believe when you look at it because it's still so beautiful and it's got all these clean, modern lines. And you say,
yes,
this must be a reasonably new ballpark. And she's 40 years old now, so it's kind of hard to believe. But, you know, it's a really interesting story behind this ballpark. And when it started, the plans for the ballpark really predate the Royals. The plans for this ballpark go back to the end of 1965 into 1966 is when they really started thinking about building a new ballpark in Kansas City. And, of course, the Royals didn't come about until a little bit later. The A's were still in town when the bond issue was passed to build this ballpark in 1967. So it predates really the ball club, but it's been our home since 1973, and we're still very proud of it.
40 years ago this year, if we were sitting here 40 years ago today on opening day in the same sort of location of the ballpark, Kurt, what would look different? How what would we see that would be so different? And I'm looking straight ahead at the scoreboard for one thing, which, of course, very different than what we would have seen 40 years ago.
It's very different. You know, one thing is we wouldn't be at opening day because actually the first 11 games, the first home openers at first 11 at this ballpark were on opening nights, which is kind of unusual. Now we think of opening day, but
why was it opening night?
You know, I think it was just that sort of time period. They thought maybe that it would be interesting that we were more fascinated by night baseball back then. You know, and now we've reverted back to really liking day baseball.
Yeah.
So, but that's where, and it was on an April 10th, 1973. It was very cold, for one thing. So if we were here on that night, we'd be bundled up because it was like 38 degrees. But if we were sitting in these seats, there would be seats here. There wouldn't be this Diamond Club. But if we looked out there, we would see the same fountains, at least the ones that are in right field. And the crown scoreboard, though it's different now, there was an original crown scoreboard there that we thought was gigantic at the time. But crown vision that replaced it now is about three times bigger than that original one, so it's hard to believe.
I should just point out, Kurt, we're hearing a rehearsal for the national anthem that will be sung again at 3:10 this afternoon when the game actually begins. Folks getting ready, lots of ushers and concessionaire people having meetings around the ballpark. As I look around, lots of bright yellow T-shirts, folks meeting and getting their marching orders for what's going to happen on this opening day. Kurt, what else would have been different from 40 years ago compared to today?
One of the big key differences would be that there would be artificial turf on the field.
Oh, that's right.
Which
sure,
is
of course.
Completely different. You know, in 95 was when we went to natural grass, and a lot of traditionalists would say we had a very good ballpark before that, and when we put grass in, it became the perfect ballpark.
Ah.
But in 1973, it was unusual. When this ballpark opened in 1973, it was the first ballpark in the American League that had an all-artificial surface field. And I say all-artificial surface because Comiskey Park in Chicago from 1969 until 75 had a weird hybrid. They had an artificial turf infield, but they had a natural grass outfield. We
That's
had a similar setup at our spring training facility in Fort Myers for many years.
And obviously the natural turf so much easier on the ball players than the artificial turf, which I always was told was like playing on a hard floor in a sense with a little padding on top.
It was really playing like playing on concrete. And you know, in Kansas City, it would how hot it gets, and it would get blazing hot out there, and it was tough on guys' knees. So a lot of guys that played many years, George Brett and Frank White, would tell you that maybe they would have played a year longer in their career if they weren't playing on our artificial turf. So in that respect, it was bad. In another respect, it was very good to us because we had a team built around speed and defense and gap hitters, and we really took advantage of other teams in the American League that were relying more on power, where our team was based on speed and gap hitters. And you know, it wasn't too long after this ballpark opened, we went on those championship runs.
And I love that about those teams, just how you just described
and
them.
It really yeah. was. The ballpark really played to our advantage. It almost played like a billiard table because you'd hit those balls down in the corners and they would go rattling around, and there were more inside the ballpark home runs hit in this ballpark than anywhere else. And some of that was speed. Some of that was because the visiting outfielders didn't know quite how to play that outfield, and our guys did.
Yeah, I miss seeing players like Willie Wilson, who was so fast. And every time he got on base, there was just this moment of great anticipation. I miss that kind of action, you know.
You know, the fastest man in baseball. It's sort of breathtaking when you see guys that are able to do that. And, you know, Willie was a tremendous base stealer, too. And to watch them play defense is really spectacular as well. And Amos Otis, who had come before, who was more of a glider, and Willie Wilson was more of an all-out guy.
Yeah.
And then Bo, of course, would come on later and sort of – he was the biggest one of them all and probably maybe the fastest one of them all, which is goes to show you what a just an unbelievable athlete he was.
We're visiting with Kurt Nelson, who's the director of the Royals Hall of Fame. What's the latest, the newest exhibit you have out at the Hall of Fame right now, Kurt?
There's two exhibits that we're going to have up all year that I'm pretty excited about and excited to see some fans come in and take a look at. One of them deals with the ballpark in the 40th anniversary. We call it Home Sweet Home, and it really talks about the origins of the ballpark and its construction, how it's changed over the years, and a lot of the great things that have happened in these 40 years. The other one that's always fun for us baseball geeks, and I say that affectionately, is I always able to work with the National Baseball Hall of Fame on an exhibit. And this year's exhibit is called Club 3000, and it deals with players that have 3,000 hits and pitchers that have 3,000 strikeouts in Major League Baseball history. A very, very select group of people, most of them in the Hall of Fame or probably headed to the Hall of Fame. And so we have some artifacts from their career, some of my favorites. We have Stan Musial's 3,000th hit baseball there, which is really kind of cool. Nolan Ryan's, the cap he was wearing when he recorded his 4,000th strikeout. And George, the base that George Brett, the first base from his 3,000th hit, which is kind of a fun story because he got a single to get that 3,000th
hit. I remember it.
At first base.
A questionable single, I think.
And it was a hard hit single, and he was at first base. And two batters later, they picked him off of first base and to end the inning. So that was kind of a bad pool there to pick off the guy that just set the milestone. But that base is on display out there. The most recent one being Derek Jeter, one of the only two players to get his 3,000th hit with a home run. He did that back in 2011. The batting helmet from that particular game is out there as well.
Well, Kurt, thank you for taking some time and joining us here on opening day. Always good to have you here.
Thank you guys for coming out. Happy opening day to you.
Yeah, same to you. Again, that's Kurt Nelson, director of the Royals Hall of Fame. Well, in recent years, baseball games have become highly produced multimedia events. But despite all the changes technology has brought, two aspects of baseball remain the same, the sport and the announcer. In honor of Royals home opening day, we meet with one of the most heard but least known team members, Casey Curran's Alex Smith reports.
1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9-10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1-2-3-4-5-6.
In the hours leading up to a Royals home game, the players stretch and practice their swing. But driving in his car on the way to the stadium, announcer Mike McCartney has his own way of warming up. When McCartney was in junior high school, he realized his voice had become a little different from his classmates.
Everybody thought I was either my older brother or my dad when I'd answer the phone. Dad had he was a salesman, so he always had a great speaking voice. And I would get into halfway through conversations on the phone that people thought I was my father before I had to give the phone up and say, you got the wrong guy.
Following the advice of his barber, McCartney got his first job in radio as a DJ in Pittsburgh, Kansas. He also picked up sports announcing gigs wherever he could. And after a couple of decades of announcing everything from basketball to dog racing, he finally signed on full-time with the Royals in 2000.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for another live edition of the Kauffman Stadium Hot Dog Derby. Pick your favorite. Ketchup, mustard, or relish. They're ready to roll.
In his years of announcing, McCartney says his voice has hardly ever given him any trouble, even during a 2010 doubleheader which went on past 1 in the morning. He rarely gets sick and doesn't have seasonal allergies, but McCartney says he has a few tricks to keep his voice in shape.
I never drink soda or milk. I never have milk for dinner before we go in to start our show. Water at room temperature only. Then sometimes I'll use a vocal spray. Sometimes the vocal cords can get kind of tired, so I'll use a vocal spray that kind of helps relax and get some moisture on the vocal cords.
The greatest hazard to a baseball announcer's night is the curveball of a tricky, unfamiliar name. And especially in recent years, McCartney says these have become more and more common.
Major League Baseball, like many sports, are so diverse right now that you get players from all over the world that come play. So it's very important before the game starts that you get with visiting team radio broadcasters and make sure that you get pronunciations correctly. And there's time you have to practice those sometimes.
Despite all his preparation, Mike McCartney admits to the occasional error.
I recall Doug Mitkevich, who he played for the Royals at one point, but he was a rookie with the Minnesota Twins, and I was probably my first year as well, and he came up to bat, and I think I introduced him as Doug Minkiewiczki or whatever it was, and I thought, that can't be right. I kept thinking to myself, and sure enough, someone comes into the booth, and in fact, it was Greg Eklund, who I know is on your staff, and he said, Mike, I think that's Mitkevich, don't you think? And I said, you know, Greg, I said, I think you're right about that. So
this year, Mike McCartney looks forward to reaching his 1,000th game straight without a game off. He says that for a baseball fan like him, coming to work at the stadium night after night is about as good as it gets.
Being able to have a job that pays you and gives you a nice seat and in air conditioning in the summertime, nonetheless, you really can't beat it.
Here comes Relish on the inside. Ketchup looks like it's out of it. Neck and neck, wiener to wiener. Here they come. Here comes Ketchup on the inside!
2013 will be Mike McCartney's 13th season as the Royals announcer. This is Alex Smith, KCUR News.
And it's Ketchup by 3 lengths.
And it's time for a break here. We're coming to you live from opening day festivities at the K, and I can officially report that the first smells of hot, slow-cooking hot dogs are wafting across the Diamond Club here. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed Friday's review of the latest films showing on area screens with our indie, foreign, and documentary film critics, you can find that and more information on all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. On tomorrow's program, the weather's finally looking like spring, and maybe it's time to get a reading selection to match. The book doctors return to share the books they've been enjoying, and they'll offer us some recommendations for your springtime reads. Well, it's been a busy few years for Kevin Ulick. Kevin is the Royals Senior Vice President for Business Operations, and he's been in that job since 2006. He oversees the entire business side of the Royals organization and was specifically involved in the renovations of Kauffman Stadium, which were completed during the 2009 season. Ulick has also led the club's efforts in the planning and execution of the 83rd Major League Baseball All-Star Game that was held in Kansas City last year. He served as executive vice president for the Washington Nationals and spent 28 seasons with the Los Angeles Angels organization, starting as a bat boy with the club in 1976. Kevin Ulick joins me now. So good to have you, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. It's a lot of fun to be here.
So you started at the bottom and worked your way up, right?
I did. It was a dream come true. I grew up in Southern California, and I played baseball in high school and in community college. And it was just through the luck of our equipment manager that told me one year they were looking for a bat boy, and I was looking for a part-time job, and it worked out, and it was a great experience.
A part-time job at age 15 or whatever it was. How old were you?
Yeah, I think I was 17 at the time. It was my senior year, and I was looking for a part-time job, and he said, "We have a bat boy," and I said, "A bat boy?" I thought he was joking. I said, "I'm 17 years old," and he said, "No, you need to be, because when the team comes home from the East Coast, it's 2 in the morning, and you need to be here to unpack bags and shine shoes." And so I was quick to do it.
Who did you meet as an Angels bat boy back in the mid-70s? Because I'm thinking, Kevin, that Nolan Ryan was on that team, right?
Yeah, he was. In fact, that's probably one of the biggest memories I had, because I attended a lot of the games and sat in the upper deck. And my first day on the job, they pulled the usual initiations. They sent me down to the bullpen to look for a box of curveballs, but I had the last
laugh. Did you find them? Oh,
no, I never found that box, but I laughed because Nolan Ryan was warming up with Andy Etchebarren, who was the catcher, and I had seen him many a times from the stands, but to actually be down there in the bullpen and stand there and watch him throw was pretty amazing, and we became pretty good friends after that.
He was a good guy to work with.
Oh, yeah, he was great. When I was 17, and most of these guys were in their early 20s, they were like having 25 older brothers. They included you in a lot, and there was a lot of practical jokes, and it was just a great time.
I think Bobby Bonds was on that team too, wasn't he?
We had Bobby there, and in fact, I always tell people I played with Barry, but it was never in a regular game. We used to play sock ball with a wiffle ball bat and rolled up sanitary socks. And Barry Bonds at the time, he was probably, 12 or 11 years old. He'd come and play in the hallways with us. Yeah.
Did he show potential even there in the hallway?
Yeah, he was a pretty good athlete.
I can imagine. How often did you toss foul balls back up to the fans?
It was kind of fun. My first position was an actual ball boy, and so during the game I sat down the left field line and would play catch in between innings with all the outfielders, the left fielders, and whenever a ball would come down, you'd have kids run down and they'd make friends with you, and so you ended up throwing up probably 4 or 5 balls a game that would come down to you there, so it was fun.
I'm just wondering, during your career, obviously beginning back in the mid-70s, how much baseball has changed in all those years, because, man, it is a different game today, I imagine, than what it was back then, Kevin.
It is, Steve. Back then, we had a press box captain who worked the press box, and his real job was he worked for UPS, and I can still remember at the end of almost every baseball season, most of the players would reach out to him to try and find a winter job driving trucks for UPS, and that doesn't happen. The stakes are much higher today. The dynamics and the finances of the game has changed so much that you don't see many guys driving UPS trucks anymore in the offseason.
Yeah, those days are history,
yes,
right?
Yes, they are.
Is the amount of money the single biggest change?
I think that's part of it. That's a huge change. But also just the way these guys go about it. When I first started, the only weight room that we had in Anaheim was a small room, and it had one of the old universal-type weight machines.
Oh, sure.
And I remember going in there after a game, and Jim Brewer, who is a relief pitcher for us, was in there, and he was having a beer, and nobody was lifting weights. It was a way to get out of talking to the media. And, today's athlete is just so much more prepared. They come to spring training. These guys are really phenomenal athletes that now play at this level. And not that they weren't in the past, but just that amount of training and how they go about preparation and that is pretty incredible.
Has the training made them better ball players? Are there stats that would suggest that the baseball player of today is a better player than 30 years ago?
I don't know if, some of the, it's hand and eye coordination, and some of it is just being a good athlete, but they definitely are stronger. I just saw an article the other day talking about Here Come the Flamethrowers, and I forget what publication it was, but it talked about the amount of pitchers that can hit now the 100-mile-an-hour mark,
is, before it was like 2% of the pitchers, and now it's 25% of the pitchers.
Really?
These guys are just, it's amazing what they're able to do these days.
We're visiting with Kevin Ulick. He's a Royals Senior Vice President for Business Operations. You were named the club's Senior Vice President for Business Operations in 2002, and that was the same season the Angels won their first World Series title. You must have had a heck of a touch with that team.
Well, I don't know about that. It was perfect timing. I had been there and kind of worked my way up through the ranks. And at the end of the 2001 season, my boss, who was the president, ended up leaving the company. And the Walt Disney Company, who owned the Angels at the time, they knew that they were going to sell it probably in the next year to 2 years. And I was fortunate. The person that we reported to, his name was Paul Pressler. He ran all the theme parks worldwide. And he said, Kevin, you've been running business operations. I just want you to keep doing that. You'll report directly to me. And Bill Stoneman, who was the general manager doing the player personnel, much like Dayton does here, he'll report to me and we'll go about our business. And that very next year, we won the first ever World Series for the Angels. So it was pretty special.
What does the Senior Vice President for Business Operations for the Royals here do anyway? What's on your portfolio?
Well, I explain it is really everything that's outside of the white lines kind of comes up through me, and everything that's inside the white lines goes through Dayton. We both are senior VPs. And so anything from stadium operations to finance to marketing to sales to corporate sales, that all falls under the business side.
That's a lot of stuff. And on an opening day, what's on your plate? What are you responsible for? Are you worried about something?
Well, the biggest thing, the building hasn't been open now for 6 months, and we went through a winter. So, those are the types of things that you just want to make sure that you're up and operating. But we've got great people. I've got 5 vice presidents that head up different areas for me, and we really have a great staff all the way down to the bat boys down there. So we really do. We're ready for it, and they take it very seriously here, and we're looking forward to a good day.
How do you become a bat boy for the Royals?
Well, for me, it was knowing somebody, and really that's the trick. There's not many jobs, and once you get into it, usually it's passed along that a bat boy will have a brother or a friend that if they're leaving, they'll go ahead and try and say, hey, come on in and work. So unfortunately, it's really knowing usually somebody that can get you in the door. But once you get in, it gets in your blood, and you don't want to leave.
Now, you've helped renovate several stadiums over the years, one in Los Angeles, another in Washington, then obviously the one here in Kansas City. Kevin, how overwhelming are those projects? Because we're talking, I'm sure, a million moving parts, millions of dollars. What about them?
It's not. It's really coordination, and it's working with great people. And in all three of those projects, I was blessed to have Populous, who was formerly HOK, and they're right here in Kansas City. And, in fact, a lot of the same designers that worked with me in Anaheim in 1996 were the same ones that worked with me in Washington, D.C. on Nationals Park.
And, well, that helps a little bit.
Yeah, and then worked here. So we both had a great comfort level. And a lot of the subs that they use, we had used on numerous projects. And so it's, it sounds like a big job, but it really is just looking out for the team's interest. And, I have the easy part. I get to say, hey, I like this or I don't like this, but there's a lot of talented people in engineering and design and architecture that work on these things. And there's a lot of people in our organization that, had some great ideas that led to the renovated Kauffman. We're really proud of it. And we put the money where fans could touch and feel it. Wasn't done in back-of-house areas and that. And, we're getting really good reviews on it.
Well, as you sit here and we're just to the left of home plate and you look out over the field, Kevin, what was the toughest decision you had to make? Is there one place that you look and think, boy, we did that, that was tough, or it came out better than we hoped?
I don't think so. When I came, I had been to the stadium once or twice during my years with the Angels. And when I came here, Dan Glass and the Glass family are just unbelievable owners and very supportive. They said, with all the focus groups we've done, there's really two things that we don't want to touch, and that's this crown scoreboard. We ended up touching it. We made it a lot bigger, but we think it turned out really nice. And then the fountains, that's what the ballpark was known for. So those were two things that we tried to work around. But, we knew what this stadium didn't have was really that 360 experience that fans before could walk up to the edge of the fountain, and you couldn't get to the outfield.
Yes.
And, for some that had been coming here now for 40 years, they may not like that. They may wish they still had the green tranquility out there with the grass and that. But it has really transformed it into a ballpark that is has a lot of energy. Our players really like it. I don't know if you've ever seen some of the stuff that they've said publicly, but
yeah.
They said they turned it into what was a library feeling out there now to a ballpark. And they love having the fans' interaction behind them with rivals and the Pepsi porch out there. And so, it turned out nice, I think.
Well, I haven't been coming here for 40 years, but I love the new 360 thing, being able to walk out behind there, absolutely. You know, a lot of folks want to know, Kevin, are you going to be selling the naming rights to Kauffman Stadium? If you do, who decides it? Where does the money go? How would that play out?
We don't know. I mean, we're on the business operations end, you know, our goal is always try and grow revenues, and that's one component of it. It's a piece that other stadiums have used. And they've actually been able to do some pretty good deals with it. You know, we're open to it. There's nothing right now in the hopper. There's nobody that we're talking to. But if there was a company that approached us and had some interest, or if there was one that we felt made sense, we'd go ahead and go down that road.
Who gets the proceeds from a change like that?
It would go to the club. There's a small amount of it that would go to the county, but that money then gets put back into what we call the RMMO fund, which would help fund maintenance obligations that we have here in the stadium. So part of it would get sunk back into the actual maintenance and operation of the stadium. Part of it would go to the team to hopefully put an improved product on the field as well. So it is. It's an important part, and it's a big piece of any team sponsorship package. But as of right now, it doesn't look like anything in the near future.
Those hot dogs smell pretty good, don't they?
Yeah, they do. It's smelling pretty good.
It's been a few months. Well, Kevin, you look as the Royals Senior Vice President for Baseball Operations. It's been great to have you. Thanks so much,
thanks,
Kevin.
Steve. Thank you
Enjoy
very
opening
much.
Day, and good luck today.
Thank you.
Okay, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We are coming to you live from the K, Kauffman Stadium, on this opening day. High expectations for this ball club as we head into the 2013 baseball season. Joining me now is Bob Kendrick, who heads the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum at 18th and Vine. Bob Kendrick, always good to have you here on the show. Thanks for taking some time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, this is a very big week for you and for the museum. On Thursday, Hollywood comes to town for a special advanced screening of 42. That's the Jackie Robinson story before it opens nationwide. This is all to benefit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and the Kansas City Sports Commission. You ready to go? Ready to stage this whole thing?
Man, we're ready. It's a really exciting week, Steve. And for us, it actually begins on Wednesday. We've got the legendary Charlie Pride in to receive the Jackie Robinson Lifetime Achievement Award from the Negro Leagues Baseball
Charlie
Museum.
Charlie Pride, the singer.
Charlie Pride, the great country western singer.
And he's getting that award because...
But many don't know.
And you're telling me
someone
didn't know.
He began his career in the Negro Leagues.
Oh, that's right. Maybe I didn't know who
with the Memphis Red Sox and then later the Birmingham Black Barons, and actually made it into the New York Yankees organization before he hurt his arm. And then, of course, he fell back, if you can fall back, on such a fabulous country music career. And so we're honoring Charlie for his trailblazing career, really. I mean, you know, he is the first African-American superstar of country music.
Yeah.
And what an accomplishment, you know, to be able to play professionally at the highest level and then to do this musically at his very highest level.
How old is Charlie Pride these
Charlie
days,
just
Bobby?
Turned 75.
No kidding.
Just turned 75.
Younger than I would have guessed.
Yeah. But, you know, he's been making music for a long time. And, you know, 65 million albums sold in his illustrious career.
Right.
I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. So we'll celebrate him on Wednesday night at the museum. Got a program there at 7:30 p.m.
Right.
And then, of course, the big red carpet screening on Thursday with Harrison Ford and Chadwick Boseman and Andre Holland and Derek Phillips, all from the film, going to be there as part of that celebration. Of course, some of Kansas City's biggest stars will also be in attendance there on Thursday night. So it's a big deal for the Negro Leagues.
Have you seen the new film?
I have.
Tell me about it.
I got an opportunity to do a very private special sneak preview of the film last week, as a matter of fact, courtesy of our friends over at AMC. And you know,
a private, very special sneak preview is a pretty special sneak preview.
That's real special.
Yeah.
And it was just a small group of us who got that opportunity. And, you know, my biggest concern was the fact that we knew this was an important film. You hope it was a good film.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, it is an outstanding film.
No kidding.
It really is. I think people will enjoy this movie as much as you can with the subject matter that it deals with.
Mm-hmm.
But the relationship that is drawn out between Jackie and, of course, his wife, Rachel, comes across very glowingly and very engagingly on the film, on, you know, as part of the film. And
right.
Harrison Ford is absolutely
what
amazing.
Role does he play in this
he
film?
He plays Branch Rickey,
okay,
the Dodgers
sure.
GM, who made that bold move to go sign Jackie. And you won't be watching Harrison Ford. You'll be watching Branch Rickey, because he literally becomes Branch Rickey in this film. Physically, you know, the makeup is just incredible. The voice, the mannerisms,
wow.
everything. You know, it's an incredible performance. I would be shocked if he doesn't at least get a nomination. Now, you know, and of course, this film comes out so early, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of other great films between now and the time that the Academy Award issues its nominations, but he is that convincing as Branch Rickey.
We're visiting with Bob Hendrick, who heads the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum at 18th and Vine. Are there still tickets available for the premiere or not?
We are sold out.
Sold out.
You know,
as it should be.
I say that with a smile, but I also say that a little bit disappointed, because I know there are a lot of people who still wanted to partake, and we just don't have space available to do so. But I think it also speaks volume to the fact that Kansas City has stepped up in a huge way to support this event. I mean, 3 hours after we announced this event and that Harrison Ford was coming, our ticket sales were just flying out of the roof.
Wow.
And, you know, we have three theaters completely full over at the AMC Barry Woods 24 Theaters. We had the capacity to potentially do more, but to have 1,700, 1,800 people descend at one time would be a lot to manage logistically. So, you know, we're happy with our 1,300 plus, close to 1,400 that will
That's
be in
exciting.
Attendance for this event.
You know, it's easy to forget sometimes, Bob, just what Jackie Robinson accomplished over his 10 seasons. And I took a look myself. He played in, get these numbers, 6 World Series. He was selected for 6 consecutive All-Star games from 49 to 54. He was the recipient of the inaugural Major League Baseball Rookie of the Year Award in 47. He won the National League Most Valuable Player Award 2 years later in 49, the first black player, obviously so honored. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 62. That's a pretty impressive list.
And he wasn't the best player to come out of the Negro Leagues.
And that's the thing.
And that's the
that's
thing.
That's the one thing you learn by touring your
yeah.
museums. He wasn't
yeah.
the best player.
He wasn't the best player. So you
Maybe
know,
not
it,
even close.
It just makes you wonder what would have happened. How would the records be different had the doors opened sooner? You know, and,
yeah.
and I think that's the thing, Steve, that we miss, because we go in and we see what Robinson does. Robinson may not have been the best player on his own Kansas City Monarch team in 1945.
In fact, some of the players were surprised he was the first one called up. They didn't think he was the right guy.
Well, if you were looking at it based solely on baseball, then, yeah, that's why they felt that way, because there were other Negro League veterans who had simply been playing the game longer. They were more established as baseball players. But when you put the entire package together,
yeah.
you had to have the right guy. You had to have the guy who was disciplined enough to be able to take the abuse and not fight back. But you also had to have someone who defied the stereotypical depiction of African-American athletes. See, Jackie was very workmanlike, very business-oriented. See, Satchel could have easily been the first. And honestly, I'm not sure Satchel would have went through as much of the racial stuff that Jackie did, because Satchel was a big star.
Yeah.
Everybody knew Satchel Paige.
Yeah.
But Satchel was too charismatic to be that first one. You know, and he was too old, really, by
yeah.
that time. Because
yeah.
I think there would have been some doubt on whether or not he could still get it done at the major league level, although he defied age and still got it done at the major league level the very next year when he gets this opportunity. But that first guy, you had to be right, because if it fails, it's another 10, 15, 20 years before another black man would have gotten that opportunity.
I'm wondering what the film depicts, Bobby, in terms of the abuse that Jackie Robinson had to endure. What do you see in the film? Remind us of the hardship that he had to
oh,
face
yeah.
down.
It will bring that out in very vividly. You know, for those, because again, you know, with each passing generation, we become more distant from those kinds of struggles. So this will very poignantly remind us of just how challenging it was for Robinson playing baseball, of all things. But you also have to remember what the position that baseball held in our society at that time. It truly was our national pastime. And so when Robinson breaks the color barrier and he comes up to Brooklyn, I mean, he is subjected to some of the most harsh treatment as any one human being would ever have to endure. And it's just about playing baseball. You know, and
yeah.
so, you know, I mean, as as Buck would say, he was called everything but a child of God when he walked out on that field. You know, and he had to
Buck
endure
that. Buck would have said that too.
Yeah.
Buck O'Neill.
You know, Buck,
yeah.
Buck, you know, he had to endure that kind of stuff. And you think about this game. This game is tough enough to play under the best of circumstances. Jackie is literally carrying 21 million black folks on his back. You know, he's carrying an entire race of people. Had he failed, an entire race of people would have failed.
What's your sense of how was he able to carry that kind of load? What was inside of him that allowed him to do that, Bobby?
There's no question. He had a level of intestinal fortitude second to none. Number one, Jackie was a very fiery and feisty guy, so it was out of character for him to take this kind of abuse.
Yeah.
But he humbled himself for the greater good of the whole.
Wow.
So he knew what was at stake here. You know, perhaps he didn't know to the great extent as this became, but he certainly knew that this was big and that this was bigger than himself. And so he was able to remove self from the equation and shoulder a load that I don't think very many of us could have carried.
You know, Bob, it's always good to have you here. Bob Kendrick, who heads the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum at 18th and Vine. Good luck with all your stuff this week, Bob.
Hey, thank you.
All right,
appreciate
man.
The
Take
opportunity.
Take care. You bet. Again, if you're just joining us, we're coming to you live from Kauffman Stadium on these opening day ceremonies for the 2013 Kansas City Royals. Now joining us finally today is an inside look at Slugger, the Royals mascot. Joining me now is Slugger coordinator Brad Collins. And, Brad, nice to have you. Welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you for having me.
What does it mean to be Slugger's coordinator?
Well, I am in charge of all things mascot-related here at Kauffman Stadium and throughout the community to represent the Royals. And this is my third year with the team. And I book all the appearances, help with all the skits, help shoot and edit the videos, maintain the costume, and, you know, make sure that everybody's experience with Slugger in and out inside the ballpark and outside the community is a good time.
Now, I hear that some mascots actually go to something called mascot school. Have you, and I guess I mean, has Slugger been to mascot school?
Yeah, of course we have. We want to make sure that Slugger is up to date on, you know, just all of the social media aspects, the marketing aspects.
The Slugger tweet?
Slugger does have a Twitter.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's at Slugger, 2 G's, 3 R's.
There you go.
Yeah. So, and that's a great way that Slugger communicates.
3 R's, of course. Yeah.
With all the other MLB mascots, the fans, and it's just another way to connect with our fans.
Does Slugger speak? Does he talk?
No.
Never?
No, he's a lion. Have you ever heard a lion that talks?
Well, I've heard him roar.
Well, that's true, but that's not talking.
Yeah. The Slugger roar?
On occasion.
Yeah, when he gets provoked in a certain way, I
Yeah,
imagine.
When the Cardinals come to town, sometimes that'll come about.
I know there's only one Slugger, but in a sense, is there more than one Slugger, if you catch my drift?
Slugger is Slugger.
Yeah.
You know, he is the embodiment of the Royals fan base and the Royals team, and, you know, it's a great fit for the Kansas City Royals.
You know, somebody who would play Slugger, who would be inside that uniform on a July day when it's 105 in the sun out here, how would someone stay cool in a get-up like Slugger's get-up there?
I've heard the key is it's not so much the water that you sweat out, it's the how fast you replace the electrolytes that you lose. So, you know, sometimes it's been rumored 5 to 7 pounds of water weight, sweat, whatever you want to call it, that Slugger loses. And it's important to not only rehydrate with water, but also all those electrolytes that you lose. That's what makes you dizzy and lightheaded if you're not paying attention.
Well, so you're talking about losing 5 to 7 pounds of water during a game. I'm wondering, someone perhaps maybe has to sort of don that uniform the next day, and I'm wondering, what's that like? And that get-up has to be a little bit challenging at some point in July, isn't it?
I mean, I think pretty much every lion I've seen smells pretty terrible. So. But no, we make an emphasis to keep Slugger fresh and clean, and he does have deodorant, and he does take baths frequently. And
is that what it takes?
Yeah.
Lots of baths and regular
washing of jerseys and all those kind of things. So.
What's Slugger's routine during a game as you get around, Brad?
Well, it really depends who we're playing, what the game is, whatever. If we have pregame tailgates, we do those. We do seat visits, birthday visits. We help probably 10 to 12 people out per year with marriage proposals in the stadium. You know, we do a 7th inning stretch. We do promos at Little K. We lead late game inning rallies if it's a close game, and so on and so forth.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, all right. That's Brad Collins. He's the coordinator for Slugger, the Royals mascot. So good to have you today, and enjoy opening day.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a fun day at the ballpark.
It's a beautiful day here. Even though it's a little cloudy, it's still a great day out here. And I should point out the Royals are actually on the field here. They've taken the field for the first time at home. Looks like what? All the infielders, the outfielders are all out there in right field out here at the K. So I guess this thing actually is going to happen. First pitch is at 3:10 today. You can find more information on all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Tomorrow on the program, the weather's finally looking like spring, and maybe it's time to get a reading selection to match. The book doctors return to share the books they've been enjoying, and they'll give us some recommendations for your springtime reads. Our thanks to Toby Cook and the entire Royals team here at the K. We had help today from KCUR's Chris Pruitt, Kim Noble, Bill Anderson, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. Our show's senior producer is Steven Steigman. Coming to you live from the K, I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date. I don't care if I never get back, so it's root, root, root for the home team. They don't win, it's a shame. It's 1, 2, 3 strikes you're out at the old ball game.